We the people. At this moment in American history, you could be forgiven for asking, who do you mean by we? Yet according to Michael Steele, those are our country's three most important words. Steele, who served as the 7th Lieutenant Governor of Maryland and is the former Republican National Committee Chairman, joined us in the studio to discuss the state of American politics, from tax reform to Trump tweets, from voting to the importance of bipartisan friendships. I've been thinking about the state of the Republican Party. Think about the state of the Democratic Party as well.
I've been thinking about that too.
I bet. And I was wondering if you, I mean, this is an obvious question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. If you were chair of the RNC today, what would you recommend, exhort? Do you have a vision for what the Republican Party could become?
Yeah.
Or is there a need for a second Republican Party that sort of embraces the more extreme?
Well, I haven't bought into this concept that we, you know, need to spin off and create another party, or that there will be a spinoff of sorts. I know that's what some folks in the Bannon world are looking to do. But I don't subscribe to that. If I were running the party today, there'd be one of two things that would have to go down. Either one, we get out of the spiral of crazy, or I resign. I mean, I'm not going to do stupid. I'm not going to do crazy, because politics is too important. And I think what we've done is trivialized it to the point where it's become a circus act. It's become something to watch. We don't take it seriously. Our political leaders, and that's an oxymoronic term these days, they're more political than they are leaders. Mm-hmm. And they tend to be more focused on very basic things like, oh, I need to get reelected. And so the reality for me, as I have done since I first became a county chairman in 1994 in Prince George's County, is to figure out the appropriate level of discipline and apply it.
What do you mean by discipline?
Well, look, they're candidates and incumbents where you have to sit down with them and say, look, we're just not doing this. This is stupid. This is wrong. It's hurting the party. I don't care if you are the president of the United States. Mm-hmm. You can't do this, because you have to recognize the fact that candidates come and go. The party is the constant. It's ideals. It's philosophy. It's platform. Mm-hmm. So it's not about one individual candidate or group of candidates, or about this sort of amorphous term party. It really is about bringing all of these disparate pieces together under this one house, very much like the country. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, 50 states decide, okay, we're going to be the United States. The same is true in politics. Everyone sort of comes up under this banner, the GOP banner, the Democratic banner. And the challenge for the party chairman and the leaders is to hold that up like a flame and say, hey, folks, this way. Mm-hmm. And you had a candidate who would stand before the country and talk about building a wall and disparaging the ethnicity of individuals and so forth. And there was no discipline.
Right.
This is what we are. This is what we believe. You get on this page, mm-hmm. or you're not in the game with us. Mm-hmm. And that never happened. And so here we are. So,
do you think people just didn't believe it could happen?
That's exactly what they thought. And I think people sort of blinded themselves with this idea that this would never happen. Well, you know, it happens. And it happens more frequently than you think. If you don't understand the pulse of the people, if you don't have a sense of where they are, what they're feeling, you are more apt than not to make the kind of mistakes that were made by 15 of my cohorts standing on that presidential stage back in 2015, who looked at the guy at the end and just kind of laughed at him, mm-hmm. and said, well, this is a clown show. This, you know, the country will get, you know, get tired of this very quickly. Well, no, he tapped into that bloodstream. He had his finger on that pulse. Mm-hmm. And what everyone failed to understand, which some of us knew and tried to warn against, is the very clear distinction that Donald Trump's viewers were also his voters.
Right.
So those who had been watching him, you know, say you're fired and, you know, enjoying his Miss America pageants or Miss USA pageants and going out there and, you know, being Donald Trump, mm-hmm. for the last 15 or 20 years, suddenly now were his voters. Mm-hmm. And if you miss that, you wind up nominating them.
Well, I have an idea.
What's that?
You're a straight talker. You're super smart.
Mm-hmm.
You're pretty lucid. Why don't you run for office?
Because I'm lucid.
That's not a thing that would tempt you.
No, it, you know,
because you really do seem to have a vision, and you have a sense of civility that we've lost.
Yeah, I you know, that's flattering, and it's a little bit awkward, but you know, that's a big step, and it's something that you think about, and you say, look, it's not a question you can do the job, because it's not that simple, as mm-hmm. we see. Mm-hmm. We now know it's not that simple, because mm-hmm. I think a lot of people go, if a businessman's president, then he'll run the country like a business. No, right. Don't do that. Don't do that. No, because we get the kind of crazy tax plan that we've got floating through the House and in the Senate right now,
mm-hmm.
when it all becomes focused on, what will make businesses great?
Mm-hmm. Is that why you say it's crazy?
Yeah, because it doesn't do what it's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a conservative tax plan. It's not anything remotely close to tax reform. So let's not mm-hmm. fool ourselves there. Mm-hmm. We can have a big and important philosophical discussion about what a conservative tax plan would look like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of absolute trickle down, because you continue to spend, and that's how you create the debt and deficits. You have to look at spending. You have to look at what you're cutting. You have to look at how you pay for it. So there are a lot of different things that I think a traditional conservative like myself would sit down and go, we can do this. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to require a little bit of give and a little bit of take. And we've kind of lost it in our politics. For me, the three most important words about America are we the people.
Hmm.
And, you know, whether you run for higher office, or whether you decide just to remain active, whether you communicate a vision or whatever that is, that has to be the centerpiece of that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The we the people.
Yeah, we the people.
Mm-hmm. And the sense that of unity.
Yeah.
Despite.
Yeah. And so it's not about building walls. It's not about favoring one group over another. It's not about preying on our fears. It is about helping us get past our fears,
mm-hmm.
and helping us get past the things that for a lot of communities have been roadblocks and, in fact, shackles. I mean, you know, when you look at the African-American community, yes, you're freed of the shackles of slavery, but you, in some sense, get re-enslaved when your community is redlined,
mm-hmm.
or when you are not afforded the same educational opportunities.
Or all your guys are incarcerated.
Or when you still live in fear of the men who are supposed to serve and protect your community.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of those things that certainly the current occupant of the White House is less inclined towards appreciating. And so for me, you know, the idea of pushing back on that is that much more important. Now, I don't know if it'll ever lead to running for president, but it is important that, you know, you push back on it.
Do you feel that your party's with you, that there are enough people who are, and I don't mean this.
I'll be honest, you know, yes and no. I mean, mm-hmm. you get the people who will quietly say, you know, I agree with what you said today on TV. I'm like, well, can you like raise your hand and
right.
put a flag over here and you say it too?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember saying to some of, you know, of Senator Flake's and Senator Corker's supporters and some of his people, look, you know, it's great to draw that line with President Trump, because the line needs to be drawn. Like any parent to his child, at some point you got to say, you know, I'm taking your toys.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you're on timeout.
I saw your tweet this morning.
Yeah.
Somebody take him off his Twitter crack.
Yeah, please take him off the Twitter crack.
Yeah.
Let's have a national intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Hashtag intervention.
Hashtag intervention. Get the man off the Twitter crack, because clearly the people around him are enablers.
Right.
All right? So it's gonna require somebody to just say, you know what? Stop it. So to the media, I tell my friends in the media, stop chasing the bright, shining objects and going down those rabbit holes that he wants you to go down.
Mm-hmm.
Stay focused on the matter that right now we are the closest we have been in a generation to a nuclear conflict with North Korea.
Well, that brings up my next question, and that is, do you think he's impeachable?
No, he's not, to be honest, because it's not going to happen. Look, you can't get Republicans to agree on a health care plan, so they're not certainly going to go. I mean, when you have Orrin Hatch as someone who I've long admired and respected and will walk on hot coals for it, because the man has been there for me in the past, and he's one of those stalwarts of the party. But even he, the other day, comes out and said, Donald Trump is the best president I've ever served under. I'm like, okay, clearly someone's passing the crack pipe.
Crack
because
and Kool-Aid
that makes no sense. Mm-hmm. This idea of impeaching the president is just not going to go anywhere. As I like to tell my Democrat friends, okay, that's just one of those dreams you like to have, but it's not going to come true. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is that scenario creates more of a problem than it solves.
How so?
Because you're going to be left with about 38% of the American voting population out there who are not going to swallow that well. And so all the animus, all the anger, mm-hmm. all the hatred, all the infected groups that have risen up mm-hmm. Because of his taunting and his tweets and his this, will now use that as a cudgel to go after the very institutions, media, academia, mm-hmm. political leaders, mm-hmm. who, whether they are down with that or not, but they will use that as a weapon in a way that I think further disintegrates the relationship we have one to the other in the community.
Well, so let's think about a peaceful transition.
It's called re-election.
You're here at Brown,
right.
So you're talking to 20-year-olds.
Right.
And I worry that they don't have the memory that you have of a more civil time.
Right.
And they don't have the model of when.
Well, that's true, because they didn't see that play out during the Obama administration, because Republicans acted like 3-year-olds and wouldn't play with them in the sandbox.
Right.
Exactly.
And so I worry a bit that there is no model.
The most powerful gift that our forefathers and mothers, because I believe a lot of what inspired our forefathers was late night conversations with
Thank
their
you.
Wives who said, no, dude, that's not, mm-hmm. that's not going to work. Don't do that. We know how this goes.
Mm-hmm.
We know how this goes. But the fact of the matter is the most powerful gift that they've given us in all the documents, and it goes back to those three words, we the people, tied to the one thing that really sets us apart from the rest of the world, and that's the vote. Mm-hmm. We have this gift to access the ballot box. Now, we can get into and it's not a side discussion, I think it's an important discussion, about how political institutions, both Democrat and Republican, left and right, have played around with that access. But at the end of the day, it still remains true that if you want to change the nation, the nature of this country, the direction of this country, mm-hmm. then you got to get off your behind, mm-hmm. to be polite, mm-hmm. and vote. That's where it's done. That's how it's done. So as much as folks want to complain and groan and moan about Donald Trump, understand this one lesson from what he did in 2015 and 2016. He took a voting population of individuals who had not been engaged in the political process for almost 30 years. We know them affectionately as the Reagan Democrats. These were the folks mm-hmm. who came out at the time of Reagan, former Democrats, not just Southerners, but from across the country, who got engaged because they liked his vision. They liked what he's talked about. We were coming out of the malaise of the Carter years. That's how the president termed it, not my term. And he talked about an America that would do better. We were dealing with a hostage crisis in Iran. So there was a lot of international and domestic turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
So he talked about the country in terms of connecting all of us to this vision, right? After his time, those folks didn't feel any connection to any of the political leadership. They voted for Bill Clinton. I always call that 1992 election is when Bubba went back home. That's exactly what happened. They turned away from Republicans and went back and voted Democrat again.
Uh-huh.
That's how Bill Clinton won. But by the time his reelection came up, you had all the scandals and everything else. They became disillusioned. By the time you get to 2000, the election process had become stigmatized. It had become infected with this us versus them mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they stayed on the couch. But along comes Donald Trump in 2015. And he starts talking to them. He sounds
yeah.
like them.
Mm-hmm.
He appeals to that inner frustration that they have, right? And he pulls them off their couch, gets them to his rally, and ultimately got them to the ballot box.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he won.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking at this process of elections, you realize just how important they are.
Mm-hmm.
He understood that, for good or bad. I mean, that's what happens afterwards is a whole different conversation. But you need to understand what he did beforehand. And so let me encourage and inspire, I guess, with an example. So after the inauguration of the president, what happened? That Saturday, you had hundreds of thousands of women show up on the mall. Everyone poo-pooed it, said, oh, yeah, this, and, you know, I'm a native Washingtonian, so we, you know, having big mall events are a dime a dozen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people come and go. It's like, can you speed it up, folks, because I got to get downtown for, you know. So, fine. Everyone joked about it, didn't think it was going to come to anything. But here's what happened. Those women organically organized themselves. They did. They weren't, you know, advertising it on the news every day. But what they did was they said, let's look around the country and see where we can find women who are ready to run. And if you want a good example of what that organization and that ballot box initiative
mm-hmm.
did, was look to Virginia. When you look at the majority of the seats that were
That's
won
right.
at the state legislative that led to the takeover of the Democrats of the state house, out of those 16 seats, 13 of them
That's
were won
right.
by women.
That's
one
right.
by trans, one by transgendered individual woman who, by the way, ran against the guy who vilified her, ran against her sexuality, ran against her personal story.
Mm-hmm.
She ran because she wanted to bring better transportation to the community.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She won. But trust me, those women are not beholden to what they see going on inside the Democratic Party right now, because they, like many other Americans, are just as frustrated with the political process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And on the heels of everything that we see now going on with women saying, Me Too, hashtag Me Too.
Yep.
That is going to be another layer added on top of this national conversation where women are going to assert themselves, I believe, in a way that will shake the roots of both political parties. And I applaud it. I'm so excited for it, because it means now maybe we can get back to getting something done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So these are the dynamics of why the ballot box is so important. And so, yes, you're frustrated with Donald Trump. There's nothing you can do about it until 2020. But if you bitch, moan, and complain, and you groan, and you whine, and then November of 2020, you're sitting here behind in your room playing video games, or 2018, you're hanging out with your friends somewhere, having a good time, and when someone asks you to go to vote, it's like, I'm not going to do that. Please, just shut the hell up. I don't want to hear your mouth.
Yeah.
But if you get out and you organize your friends, you get out and you vote. And again, I've always been an advocate for this level of civic participation. I'm right now the interim chair of the U.S. Vote Foundation, which is all about getting people focused on their civic responsibility to vote. I don't really care if you vote Republican or Democrat as long as you vote. Now, when I put my Republican hat on and I come in and I'm going to lay out a platform or a plan or a candidate, that's a different conversation. It's incumbent on me then to convince you to vote for this idea or this candidate.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Sure.
My father was a, let's say, New Yorker reading Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought me up insisting that one exercise one's right to vote.
Yep.
And insisting on the secrecy of the ballot being sort of sacred, and
yep.
you never ask and you never tell, or
right.
you should never feel
compelled,
you need to tell.
Right.
And I know you said you would not vote for Clinton or Trump, but did you vote?
I absolutely voted.
Okay, good answer.
No, I put a name on the ballot, someone that I thought would make a good president, and voted. You know, the script has flipped for Republicans. Democrats are in a better position than we are now, as we were in a better position than they were then in 2010. So this understanding this landscape and recognizing the power of the vote, particularly when it is now animated and energized in a way that we've not seen before. And I think the number of successes that women have had in the most recent election, and then we'll wait to see how many are running for Congress, how many are running for governor, how many are running for Senate, how many are running for state legislatures, the rest of those legislative races across the country in 2018. that day after, it's going to be very telling mm-hmm. about where the country's headed mm-hmm. and who's prepared now to lead it.
Well, keep telling the young people to vote. I love that.
No, absolutely. It is. If you pay taxes, you should be voting. Mm-hmm. So you got a part-time job, you look at that paycheck, and where it says federal, FICA, state, and all those are zeros, okay, I get it. You don't have to play. But if there's a number there, you better get your behind out and get engaged, because you're now part of the decision-making process of this country mm-hmm. as a taxpayer. If you have a parent or family member who is in need of government assistance, you have to exercise your right to vote.
It's a responsibility, yeah.
You know, if you have a sibling who has special needs, you have to exercise your right to vote, because you have men and women in your state legislature and in your Congress and sitting in the White House who are making decisions that will fundamentally change their lives for the better or the worse.
Mm-hmm. I have two more questions. One is quick. Have you ever been on the bad end of a Trump tweet?
No, but I look forward to it.
Okay.
Because I'm ready to engage.
I sense that you are, and you don't hold back in your tweets.
I mean, it's like he tweeted out after the Virginia election.
Mm-hmm. I saw, yeah. Your tweet was great.
And he get this crazy tweet where he goes after my buddy Ed Gillespie. Now, the man, you know, just lost an election. I have been in that space. It's not fun to lose an election, particularly one when everybody's looking at you. You know, it's a national election. And he tweets out, well, you know, it's like, basically, he was a lousy candidate, yeah. You know.
And your tweet was
awesome.
And my
tweet was, did you win Virginia?
That's great. That was great. But he doesn't respond when you do that.
No.
That's interesting.
He's not going to.
Okay.
I think he knows. I've worked with the man. I think he knows me well enough to know.
My last question for you is about something that I brought up before. We had Jenny Baucus and Brian Jones on mm-hmm. the show a couple weeks ago. And I'm just fascinated by bipartisan friendship, which is sort of increasingly exotic seeming to me. And it is, and sadly.
Yeah, no,
and I like to remember that it's possible, and I love to see it instantiated here in the studio. And I know you're here with Tom Perez. And, and so explain to me how your friendship works, because you disagree on important things.
Oh my gosh, Tom and I will have knockdowns on policy. I mean, I'm like, dude, you got to stop drinking whatever you're drinking. And he'll look at me, you got to stop smoking whatever you're smoking. I'm like, okay. So no, we have that. In fact, it is one of the reasons why it works, because we respect each other's opinion and we're not afraid of it. Not afraid of what he has to say. I'm not afraid when he's right mm-hmm. on an issue. I'm a very, very pro-life individual, have been my entire life, based on my upbringing, my faith tradition, and the personal, quote, I'm going to use that word, choices that have been a part of my own journey, right? And so when I engage with someone like Tom, who has a very profound, important perspective that is opposite from mine, a pro-choice perspective, I learn from him, because I listen and I learn what that challenge is for a lot of women and men who have to confront those issues. So if we shut our ears from listening and learning, you cannot be friends. I can't be your friend if I don't listen to you.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can, you know, that's why I listen. I laugh at these guys on Capitol Hill, you know, my friend, the senator from X, my friend, the congressman from, he's not your friend. You don't even know. You couldn't even tell me how many kids he has. You couldn't tell me what his favorite color is. You couldn't tell me what part of the state he's from. You don't know. Mm-hmm. These people aren't friends with each other anymore like the way they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
In the good old days, and they did exist, members brought their families to Washington. Their kids went to school together. Their wives or spouses socialized, interacted with each other. They would have dinner. You could go to pretty much any restaurant in town, and there were select favorites, but pretty much any restaurant, and you would find a round table with seven or eight members of the opposite party sitting there having dinner, talking about the day. Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan ended every day over a bottle of scotch.
I love that image. I really
do.
Do.
Because, you know, Tip would come down to the White House and he would sit there and they would joust around about the politics of the day, and then they get down to business about, okay, so what do we, how do we deal with tax? That's how we got tax reform in 1986. That's how we got a number of the things where both the Democrats and the Republicans, quote, won, all right, politically. But the American people won substantially because we were able to be the beneficiaries of smart public policy.
Do you think there's a political price to be paid for being openly friendly?
Oh, today there is. I have members. I know a number of members who Democrats, Republicans, who tell me I can't be seen talking to a member of the opposite party because the moment I'm off the floor, the caucus chair will call me and say, "What were you guys?"
That's awful.
We live in the land not of giants, but of cowards. And my recommendation is that next year when people go to the ballot box, they fire them all.
Well, we'll
and replace them with people who are civic minded, who are people centric, and who can be conservative, who can be liberal, who can be progressive, who can be Republican, who can be Democrat. But at the end of the day, and at the beginning of the day, they start and end with "We the people."
Amen to that. Well, let's have you back next year after the election.
Yeah, that ought to be fun.
Michael Steele, it was so great to have you here today.
Great to be
Thank
here.
You for talking to
Thank
us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
This has been Trending Globally, Politics and Policy. If you enjoyed today's conversation, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher, or download us on your favorite podcasting app. If you like us, rate us, and help others who might enjoy the show find us. For more information, go to watson.brown.edu.